Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area.
Welcome to another episode of Revolution Recap, part of the Believe Network. We're coming to you after the last place New England Revolution finally picked up their second victory of the season, a 1-0 win in Chicago against the Fire. Not just a win, but a road win. I'm Sean Donahue, joined today by Hayden Bird of the Boston Globe. Hayden, how's it going?
It's going well, and for once, I can say it's also going well for the Revs, at least in the immediate short term.
Yes, yeah, that is, it's a low bar, but 3 points on the road for the Revolution is a huge thing for them at this point in the season when they're 10 games in and just picked up their second victory of the year. So yeah, there's some positivity that we'll have on the show, which we haven't had for a while. But before you jump into that and our takeaways, I wanted to talk about our sponsor, Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, MLS, golf, NBA, and the NHL playoffs. Stats, all the latest stats, news, and scores are available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. Hayden, I saw somebody said they bet $100 on the Revolution money line last night. Looked like a terrible bet to me, but they won. So, you know, if you want to place lots of money on the Revs, I don't recommend it, but Bet Online is the place to do it.
That is honestly the best like gambling promo that you could have for the Revs, in a sense, or just for like any MLS team, in my opinion, just because gambling on MLS, you know, if you want to do prop bets, that's fine. On the outcome, I mean, that seems fraught with danger to me financially, but you know, hey, go on in, just responsibly, of course.
The odds you can get though on Lionel Messi to score every game are very tempting, because he's been scoring every game and it's been like minus 120, which to me is nuts. So if you can still take advantage of that, that is probably a better choice than betting on the Revs money line.
Yeah, that's about the closest thing I would say in MLS right now to a sure thing, maybe.
Yes.
So that seems like much more easy money, but outcomes, that's crazy to me.
Yeah, let's get right into our key takeaways, which are brought to you by our friends at the Rebellion Supporters Group. Be sure to check them out on Twitter at AnyRebellion and their website, anyrebellion.org. Hayden, what is your key takeaway from this one?
It's that if the Revs want to salvage anything from this season, I think that Caleb Porter, they're both parties here are going to have to meet each other kind of halfway. Caleb Porter is going to have to change his system, and the Revs personnel are going to have to learn to adapt in some way, shape, or form to the new world that they live in under Caleb Porter, because his system, there's a lot to like in theory, but I think as currently constituted, the roster that they have is not built to play that in a way that is conducive to winning consistently or creating goal scoring chances, more importantly, or not conceding chances, also importantly. So, they get a win tonight, but it comes from, you know, a moment of direct play in which Giacomo Vrioni, you know, flicks it on vaguely in the direction of Chonkolai, who then basically just grabs the game by the scruff of the neck, takes it himself, and fires an absolute highlight goal in kind of a thunderbolt out of the blue, not necessarily the result of, you know, organized control in a game the way that Caleb Porter wants. And then on the other side, you know, they manage the shutout, which is great, which they have not been great at in the last, I don't know, 10 months or so, but they do that, but of course they do that with a couple notable moments of concern there, including a truly a world-class save from Ivicic in his first start to deny Shaqiri. You know, you take that away and that's another disappointing 1-1 draw, just like they had a few weeks ago against Chicago. So, you know, these are the margins that your season is going to be defined by. And in order to maximize that, I think both parties, like I said, are going to have to find a sort of compromise solution here in how they want the team to play.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you just said there. And I think it's important, well, taking some positivity from the fact that they got 3 points on the road, to also be realistic. You know, you mentioned the shutout. Chicago Fire hadn't scored in three straight games going into this game. Four out of the last five they hadn't scored, and then before that was the 1-1 draw with the Revs. So they're not a team that exactly is firing on all cylinders offensively at all. So it's great the Revs got a shutout, but it wasn't a great offense that they got the shutout against. So, you know, positive they hit the clean sheet, but reality check, it's against a team that had not scored in three straight matches, now four straight matches, and had not scored in four of the last five. So take what you will from that. I think the Revolution are going to have a much harder task this upcoming weekend against the Red Bulls if they're going to get a shot on that game. That would be something, you know, certainly that would mean a lot more. And offensively, you're right. You know, you look at what Caleb Porter wants his team to do and, you know, kind of build out of the back and create chances that way with possession and kind of break teams down, sort of like Pep Guardiola wants to play, but you know it hasn't really played out that way, and it didn't play out that way this game. The Revs are outpossessed in this game, and the goal that they did score was, like you said, direct soccer, a long kick from Ravas. Vrioni flicks it on, defender makes a hash out of it, and Chonkalai takes a couple touches and hammers a shot into the upper corner. And on that note, Chonkalai has taken 47 shots outside of the box before this game, scored on zero. So I don't know how likely that is going to continue to happen. You know, good that he did in this game, but you know, I don't know that this is necessarily repeatable result. I guess a better team like the Red Bulls, and I don't know that we necessarily saw enough in this game that the Revs are capable of playing the way Porter wants them to play still, even though they got the result in this game. You know, again, the way they scored was, again, the result of direct soccer, not the result of kind of the way he wants to play. And it's great that they showed some flexibility to do that. And I think we saw a few times in this game where they were able to play a bit more direct and it worked. But yeah, I think there are still plenty of reasons to be concerned while also positive that they got 3 points.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think we're going to see, I mean, you know, the next really, you know, month, or for the rest of May, you know, they play Red Bulls, Philly, NYC, and Columbus. Those are all, you know, two away, two at home. And, you know, that will be a much better gauge, as Porter has been saying, in terms of, you know, breaking the season into quarters. He said, you know, the first quarter was a disaster. So the second quarter, you start out losing to Leo Messi. Well, okay, that's kind of a write-off. You know, this game, you get the result that you wanted, if not, you know, aesthetically, maybe the way that you wanted it to go, but then, you know, okay, but now how do you build off that? Because we've seen them get a win before this season. And what did that lead to? It led to, you know, another bunch of games where you didn't get a second win and you didn't build anything off that. So it's kind of, how can they build on this now would be how I would project this, because it's like, it doesn't matter if you just scrape by and got a 1-0 win. If the perception is that your confidence is growing and that perception becomes reality, then that's all you really need this to be. But is that going to be the case? Yeah, I'm holding out a little bit on that.
And you could also make the case in this game that the Revs played more of the way Caleb Porter wanted them to play in the first half when they had 60% possession and were outshot 9-2 and the Fire were the much better team. And then in the second half, it was a completely, you know, tale of two halves. The Revs outshot the Fire 9-6, beat them on expected goals, scored their goal in that one, and only had 38% possession. So it was almost when they got away from the way Caleb Porter seems to want them to play that they looked a lot better in this game, which is interesting. But it goes back to your point, is I think that, you know, Caleb Porter needs to be more flexible. And I almost think it was by design that they were played that way in the second half, because you saw them come right out kind of firing out of the gates, playing a bit differently and looking better. So maybe that was maybe if you're going to take a positive away, it's that the Revs adjusted at halftime and looked a much better team in the second half and weren't really playing the way that you think Caleb Porter wants them to play.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like you look at, I know, you know, we pull out metrics like XG, in which Chicago prevailed in that. They had a superior XG, even though the Revs were able to find the goal. And then you look at the heat map, which then I'm playing, you know, the naming all the things that people vaguely don't care about in terms of soccer analytics. But, you know, those are both tools. And just looking at like their heat map from the game collectively as a team, it looks a lot like Bruce Ball in terms of like, it's a lot of, you know, green possession, you know, like indicating that they had the ball in out wide a lot and not a lot in the kind of middle of, you know, the attacking third, which obviously is what you want under any setup, but is definitely what I know Caleb Porter wants to do. And so, yeah, you know, they got there, but they didn't get there playing Porter ball. It was definitely, you know, a glimpse into the past a little bit in terms of how they were, you know, moving things around and how they created chances in the second half, as you were saying, with, you know, more so out of possession or with less possession anyway than Chicago had.
And it's funny you bring up expected goals. If you want an indication of why the Chicago Fire have been shut out so frequently, this is a good thing to look at. Is at least according to FootMob, their expected goals 1.29. Their expected goals on target, so based on how the quality of the shot was, it's just 0.3. So they 1.3 expected goals, but when you actually factor in the quality of the shot, just 0.3. So you get a sense of why the Fire haven't scored a lot of goals lately. And on that note, on the Rev side, you know, you mentioned the Revs had less expected goals than the Fire. They did. It was 1.29 to 0.89. The Revs expected goals on target was 1.48. So the Revs were actually pretty efficient with their chances in this game, which is not always the case. And certainly compared to Chicago, they were much more efficient. And you go back to the goal that they scored, that was a 0.04 expected goal chance that Chonkolai turned into a 0.55 expected goals on target. So that was a fantastic shot by Chonkolai. But you're not going to score from that position very often, as you know, evidenced by the 0.04 expected goals from that chance. So, you know, again, great 3 points for the Revs. They did what they needed to do. I think it was a very professional performance on the road. But, you know, if you listen to the podcast last week, I said if the Revs don't win in Chicago, I'm not sure when their next win is going to come, because that was the easiest game on the schedule in the near-term future. So they got the job done, but I think there are still reasons for concerns, and I'm still not convinced that anything has necessarily changed until we see them, you know, maybe get a result next weekend against Red Bulls, or maybe come back home and get a result against Philadelphia, in which they're, you know, playing better teams. But yeah, so basically I'm agreeing with your takeaway and don't really have a different one of my own.
I mean, you know, I think anyone who's watched enough of the team at this point, I'm sure Caleb Porter probably feels this way too. He's looking at it being like, you know, I mean, I know they're trying to do things, and he is definitely talked about, you know, obviously how they need pieces. He's used that phrase a lot in terms of trying to add new players and different players, I guess, more specifically. You know, I think something I'll say about sort of a secondary takeaway, I guess, if we're breaking into that a little bit, is just, you know, I was impressed with Henry Kessler tonight. I thought he played really well, not just defensively. He was able to take care of some of their early attacks when Chicago had early pressure in the first half, but he also completed more passes than any player on the team. He completed passes at the highest percentage of anyone on the field in the game. And, you know, it was just all around. I think he lost the ball once kind of moving up in possession, but it wasn't like a totally terrible turnover because he was farther upfield. You know, he's someone who I know there have been a lot of questions about. Can he, you know, what does he do maybe that Dave Romney doesn't do? And what I would say is, especially in relation to what Porter wants, I think he's better in possession, you know, not dramatically, but I would say definitively than Dave Romney, especially in terms of when they're under pressure, when teams are pressing them. Is he just going to hoof it clear, or is he going to look for, you know, to try to move the ball forward or find an open pass? I think Kessler is a little bit better at that. And Arriaga has that capacity. I think tonight he was lucky not to get carded there in the first half, though. He had a couple bad challenges that, you know, maybe that's something to keep an eye on with him in terms of his ability to make clean tackles. But he also looks like a good player too. And I think, you know, in a sense, if they're both healthy, Revs fans can feel a little bit better about the center back pairing. And then with Ivicic behind him, I mean, if he plays the way that he played on Saturday, you know, that's a great pickup for them. So I think, you know, the starting job appears to be his for the foreseeable future. But having said that, I'm trying to think of a moment in which he really had to use his feet and was maybe put under pressure, because, you know, that's Rabas had pretty good, has good shot stopping too. So if we're looking at a comparison, I'd be curious to see how Ivicic does when, you know, those similar factors in terms of the Revs are trying to build out of the back and he has to make a pass or something. I want to see how that happens. But, you know, just as defensively, you know, I was, I don't want to say impressed, but I was like, okay, well, I'm feeling a little bit better about it maybe after that game. And if we're looking at specifics from takeaways there.
Yeah, it's a good time to transition into listener questions, because we have a few about Ivicic. So let's jump into those now. And our listener mailbag today is brought to you by Subchuck Law. You can find Subchuck Law's website in our show notes. So let's start with that. Owen Guillaume on by email, a rare emailed question, says Ivicic is very composed in net and with the ball at his feet. Would you agree that this is what the Revs need right now to give them some confidence? And then James Downing on Twitter says, do we now have a clear-cut number one keeper, or do we have a goalkeeping controversy, or will the Revs attempt to platoon keepers like a certain other Boston sports team are doing at the moment, which is referring to the Bruins?
I mean, you know, I think it's a little early to say, you know, one way or the other. You know, I am, I guess, hopeful for Ivicic, you know, based on this performance that, you know, maybe, yeah, he can kind of find a, you know, sort of redemptive arc here in New England. You know, obviously, I know the talk of him coming in was that he was really good a couple of years ago in the league, and that, you know, just, you know, obviously had some drama there in Portland, but, you know, and he was asked about that, and he said, well, he just wants to obviously put that in his past, and okay, you know, and that's so, but, you know, I know on the broadcast, they mentioned like he was asked like if he wanted to go back to Europe, and he said he had unfinished business in MLS. And apparently that was said with weight and tone that there was clear intent there. So who knows, you know, maybe he's very motivated, and certainly looked like it when he faced that Shaqiri free kick, because that was no easy save. I mean, that was full extension diving stop, and to tip that over the bar, people don't realize how hard that is, how much, like, you know, strength that requires. So that was truly a world-class save. And again, I mean, those are the margins in which, you know, your team either walks away with a crucial 3 points or another disappointing, you know, 1 point, which granted would have been still their first road point of the season, which would have been, I guess, an achievement, but, you know, to get a win was huge. And it broke in their favor on the strength of that save, really. So, you know, yeah, I think for the moment, I mean, he seems like he would be the starter until he loses the job, basically, because I think Ravis kind of did fumble the bag a little bit there in terms of his starting role. So I think for now, you know, it's early, it's one game, but from what you've seen, I definitely liked what I saw from him.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's his to lose, but I think the leash is probably short because, you know, they have put money under Ravis. I actually thought Ravis's last couple games were among his better games. So you're kind of benching him at a time where, you know, again, he gave four goals to Miami, but I don't think any of them were his fault. So you're kind of benching at a time where he didn't necessarily deserve it. If you'd done it a few games prior, you know, probably more earned. But no, the way Ivicic played in this game, it's his to lose. He's going to start next week almost certainly. And, you know, assuming he has a decent job, he's going to stay in net, I think. But, you know, it's still probably written in pencil rather than pen at this point. He needs to show it for a lot more games. Like you mentioned, 2 years ago, he was a fantastic keeper. You know, we look at goals against minus expected goals against for goalkeepers a lot because Turner and Petrovic led the league in those categories many, many seasons. And Ivicic was top four in that 2 years ago, which is, you know, shows he's a really good shot stopper. And then last year, he was near the bottom of the league in that stat. So it's hard to know what you're going to get. If you get the Ivicic that you had 2 years ago, that'd be a phenomenal signing for the Revolution. I think he'd be the locked-on starter for the Revs the rest of the season. If you get the Ivicic that you got last year, you know, it's a different story. He probably loses the starting spot at some point, and then you have questions of what happens from there, because, you know, when he lost the starting spot in Portland, things didn't go very well. He had a falling out with the coach. You know, eventually waived going into this year. There was a lot of controversy there. I think he filed a complaint against the team, and the team filed a complaint against him. It was kind of a mess. So, you know, as long as he's starting and things are going well, that's great. If he starts to play poorly and there becomes more of a keeper controversy and Ravis gets a chance again, I think you kind of have to have your fingers crossed that things work out based on the way they worked out in Portland, that things work out better here. So, starter for now, but I wouldn't say he's a locked on starter. If he, you know, has a bad game next week, might be right back to Ravis.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. You know, we saw early in the season, you know, they Earl Edwards had his chance kind of to, you know, take the starting spot and didn't really, grab onto that with both hands. So this is clearly Ivicic's chance. You're right. I mean, Ravis, you know, wasn't bad. And I mean, the strength of his game is shot stopping too. So who's to say he wouldn't have also maybe made a bid at least at saving that free kick. But Ivicic getting the win, I mean, yeah, I would think they would stick with him at least for the next game though.
Yeah. And you're right that he wasn't under a lot of pressure passing out of the back this game. But what we've been told about him from Caleb Porter is that he's, you know, really good with the ball at his feet and confident there. And I think that's important to Caleb Porter's system. So, like, saying that plays out the way, you know, you think it will based on Caleb Porter's comments, that I think that is a confidence boost for the Revs and will help them in doing what they need to do. With all that said, I think the biggest thing missing for the Revolution in Caleb Porter's system is a guy like a Darlington Nagbe to kind of connect the in transition from the defense to the offense and kind of build that way. I think that's a missing piece more so than anything else. You know, there are other issues as well, but I think that's the key one. They didn't address that yet. I do think actually, going off on a kind of a tangent away from this question, but I do think actually Mark Anthony Kay had some pretty good passes going forward in this game, maybe more than we've seen in a while. So, you know, props to him, but I still don't know that long term that's the answer there. I still think that's the position that the Revs have to look at going forward, and we'll get to some questions about that later, I think. On that note, we have some questions about Dylan Barrero and his kind of comeback. If you were on Twitter last night, I tweeted out about how many turnovers he was having and that he looked very rusty. We have some questions about that. Owen says, although he's still working his way back, Barrero's turnover could have cost us 3 points. The poor defense of the midfielders tracking back is becoming apparent, especially on turnovers. The midfield is wide open. Any thoughts? And Tail Forever on Twitter said, Dylan looked rusty. What is reasonable to expect from him in the coming weeks and months? So I think there's kind of two questions there. One about Dylan Barrero and, you know, what's reasonable to expect from him in the coming months. I assume you agree he looked rusty in this game, because I certainly thought he did. And then the second question, I guess, is, do you see poor defensive midfielders tracking back becoming apparent in this Revolution system under Porter?
I mean, that's not a thing that's unique to anyone's system. I mean, that's a thing that was probably to some extent true under Bruce as well. You know, I mean, they had some different personnel over the years, and some of them were more interested in playing defense, like Teal Bunbury, and some of them were not. I mean, you see that even sometimes with players like Carlos. I mean, like, he does work hard defensively, but also there are times where he doesn't. You know, obviously we saw Gustavo Bo was very uninterested in tracking back a lot of the time, unless he like had personally lost the ball and then he took that personally or something and would track back. So yeah, I mean, I think some of their, you know, with it for Barrero, I think you just need to get him minutes. You just need to get him back on the field and do it obviously in a safe and, like, you know, sort of restrained way, cautious initially. And that seems like that is their goal right now. And he's just such a dynamic player though. In this league, like I was saying, in terms of the margins, you know, you need to have guys like that in your lineup as much as possible. So even if there's a chance that, like, yeah, he's going to create some negative plays, there's a greater chance, in my opinion, that he's going to do something dynamic that's going to help you in a way that other players who are maybe safer, like Nacho Hill, maybe aren't going to do as regularly. And that's not a knock on Nacho. He's just a different type of player. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I will say, like, you know, if you do up your ACL, this is true. I'm basing this primarily, honestly, off of, like, you know, like American football or something. But I feel like that first year back, they're not at their best for really that a lot of that entire season. So I think Revs fans are going to have to be really patient with Dylan Barrero. But just look at the long game. Remember what he was before that in terms of, you know, he was in the Colombia national team. He was clearly a player on the rise and is someone who at his best can be an absolute electric, you know, difference maker at a level like MLS or a lot of other levels too, for that matter, which is why he might, you know, he was rumored to be, you know, maybe a guy heading overseas at some point before that injury. So now coming back from that injury, it's going to take a minute though. So yeah, I mean, you know, if he's not tracking back, that's a separate conversation, but I think, like, that's kind of a details problem to me, is like, you want to have players like Dylan Barrero on your team. And then, you know, you worry about those good problems about, like, you know, defending without the ball, but obviously, you know, those are larger issues for the Revs anyway, beyond Dylan Barrero and a number of other players too. But yeah, I mean, you know, not his best night. And I think, you know, you're going to have to dial back your expectations a little bit. He might have a couple more nights like that, especially coming off the bench. I don't know if maybe that's something he is as good at, maybe. But we'll see. I mean, it's good to see him back, obviously. And that's, I'm trying to keep my view in the long term with him, because that's where, you know, I think that's really going to pay off. He's, you know, he'll be an asset for the Revs.
Yeah, and I talked about this last week, is you do have to dial back your expectations. It's going to take him a while to get back to being the player he was. I completely agree with you. When you have an ACL injury like that, or, you know, a knee injury, it can take a full year to get back to who you are. And that's a full year after you know, are first able to get back on the field. So you definitely have to dial it back. It's going to take him, I wouldn't expect in the next, you know, couple weeks that he's back to starting and back to being who he was. I think maybe the hope is in a couple months that he's closer to that. With that said, this was a tough one, right? Because you talk about fine margins. It's also fine margins between the Revs, and you're up with a one goal lead. You can't really afford a lot of mistakes with this team. They're probably not going to score a second goal. They had a chance to in this game. They didn't do it. And it's difficult when you have a guy like Barrero, where you're trying to get him minutes and get him back to who he was, because he needs those minutes. But then, you know, you're putting him in a situation where a turnover in the defensive third, when he's trying something, could end up costing you 2 points. So it's tough, because I don't think he looked very good in this game. I don't think it's surprising he didn't look very good. He looked very rusty, and you know, you want to get him minutes, but it was almost in a difficult situation to have him get those minutes in a slight, you have a one goal lead, you're trying to hold it. you know, I don't know. I forget who it was suggested on Twitter that, you know, maybe the Revs give him some Revs 2 minutes. I don't know if that's ideal. It's such kind of a low level. Maybe you do that now. If you're going to do it, you do it now. But as things go along, it doesn't make sense. But that's tough too, because you're playing with, you know, lower quality players that you might be more likely to come up against and get an injury when you're trying to do what you normally do. So yeah, it's just, I think that is a tough situation. If the Revolution were losing this game, it's a, you know, like, makes a lot more sense to get Barrero in there and see if he can, you know, find some magic. Even if it's tied, maybe see if he can find some magic. But they put him in a tough spot in this one, and which is, you know, turnovers became very apparent and kind of on both ends of the field. They had, you know, some turnovers in the offensive third where he didn't look good, and he had a couple of shots that were, you know, about 10 yards high of the net. Again, which is all to be expected. It's just, when the Revs need every single point they can get and they're holding on to a one goal lead, it's a tough situation.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, you know, to that point, maybe this kind of falls more on Porter, because, like, maybe don't sub him on in that situation. Like, I know you're trying to get him minutes, and I totally understand that from, you know, what we were saying. But yeah, as you were just saying, you know, I mean, if you're clinging to a one goal lead desperately for that first road win, you know, maybe now's not the time to play your wild card. Maybe you want to play someone a little more dependable. Maybe that's when you put, you know, Nobuck went in later, but maybe that's when you put Nobuck in to kind of help solidify that midfield, as opposed to stretch it out a little more. And, you know, even a player like Boateng, who you maybe can count on a little more defensively to some extent, at least in terms of ball pressure, at least, maybe that's the sub. But, you know, hey, I guess, you know, I know Caleb Porter is excited to have Dylan Barrero back. So maybe he just kind of, like, his eyes went wide there. He's like, oh, I could bring on Dylan Barrero here and maybe he'll, you know, get a goal for us. But you know, maybe, yeah, those expectations need to be tempered a little bit.
Yeah. On a similar note, Barbara S. on Twitter says, why did the Revs pull Esmer when they did? It seemed like he was doing great and making the Fire miserable. And it was Esmer that got pulled for Barrero, right? Or was that Buck?
Let's see. Buck came on for Vrioni. Yeah.
Okay. So it was Barrero that came on for Esmer. Yeah.
Barrero for Esmer in the 75th. Yeah. That is an interesting one. I think, I'm not sure what Caleb Porter would say in terms of, you know, I remember seeing it at some point. I wish we had access to this information more generally, but at some point during the broadcast, they showed like distance traveled or covered in the game. And I always find those stats, like, obviously that's just kind of cool to know how many miles a soccer player runs in a game, because it's many miles. You know, it's like when they showed it like midway through, or at some point, I think in the second half, Mark Anthony Kay and Esmer were the Revs leaders with like 4.2 miles run at that point. And so you're like, okay, maybe, you know, younger player at some point, you're like, okay, he's probably tired at that point, and you know, you want to sub him out. And then, you know, you have the sort of maximum impact of subbing on, then you're like, you know, speedy dynamic winger like Barrero to really charge at him, sort of like a change of pace with a pitcher or something. But I will say I thought he played pretty well, although he didn't, you know, he wasn't completing passes at maybe the same percentage. He takes chances though with his passes, so he's not going to complete as many. And I like that about Esmer's game, honestly. But I guess maybe theoretically you're like, you take off a player like that to, you know, put on a player who's a little more dependable. But then again, that's not Dylan Barrero. So, you know, maybe that, yeah, I don't entirely understand that, but I guess in separate cases, I can see the logic, but together, I don't see it as much, you know?
Yeah. To me, I think it was a case of wanting to get Barrero minutes, like we talked about before. And, you know, when you're putting Barrero on, all right, you probably have two choices. If you want to make a like for like sub, you take out Esmer, you take up Chonklai. And I think between the two of them, made more sense to take out Esmer. Again, going back to the prior point, I don't know this was the best situation to bring Barrero into. So, you know, that's a different conversation. But I think that's why the sub was made, was, you know, let's get Barrero minutes. And also, Esmer hasn't gone 90 much at all this season, I don't think. So, you know, he might have been tired. And I saw the same graphic you saw about the 4.2 miles run. So, you know, he also was coming off of being really sick last weekend. So
that's a good point. Honestly. Yeah.
So, you know, it's quite possible he wasn't fully 100% to go 90 minutes. So, yeah, I guess I'm not, I didn't, in hindsight, I don't love the sub because of how Barrero played. And I'm not sure that was the right sub to make. Maybe you bring on Boateng instead, but I get why Esmer was the guy to come off in that situation. All right. Jake Katniss from the Blazing Musket on Twitter says, petition to rename Route 1 in Foxborough the Ivicic Chonka Highway, or wait another week.
I mean, I am always for things like that. You know, it's like when those Bills fans bought like a billboard right down the street from Gillette or whatever. Like, I don't know, involving Route One locally in any sort of sports banter is always a good thing. So, yeah, why not? I mean, but, you know, having said that, that is a hilarious way that, you know, as we were saying, like Porter Ball is like the opposite of that. And then they're just like, and we're going to create a goal off of this exact type of thing. And I love that it wasn't even like that precise of a flick on from Brioni. It was like right at, you know, Chonkla. I was like, no, it's just kind of like in his direction, sort of. And then, all right, just go get it, buddy. And he did. And then, you know, he cut inside and, you know, was the sort of like return to street ball moment that, you know, Porter is sort of no, yesing is, you know, in the background there. But yeah, I mean, you know, as I know, you know, the thing is, Porter in his like opening press conference when they first hired him was like, well, we can't be naive, but sometimes we have to play it long. So I know like he sort of realizes the reality of that. I just think that every bone in his body is fighting against accepting that as a thing, maybe. But, you know, having said that, you know, it's not like they were discouraging those long balls. They were like, you know, in the second half, I think maybe that was an adjustment, was that to play a little more direct, and that worked. So yeah, hey, Route One, why not?
You set up the perfect transition for the next question, which is from Eric on Twitter. He says, Ivicic had a good night, but every time he punted the ball long, I felt for Ravas, since Caleb ripped him for one of the few times he knocked it long in the prior game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know, like I was saying, like, I know Porter probably accepts in his inner thoughts, like, okay, well, maybe we have to do that. But like, I know that outwardly, he just like, he probably doesn't want to accept that, 'cause he's like, no, we can do it. And I see, like, you know, he clearly believes in that. And that's, you know, ultimately that's good, 'cause you want a coach who believes in his convictions, whatnot. And, you know, but yeah, as we were saying also earlier, like Ravas might have gotten, you know, kind of at an inopportune time. He kind of not unfairly, but just like, he didn't totally deserve this benching. He's kind of had a rough one. The defense in front of him has not been particularly great either at times. So you can't put all that on him. But yeah, you know, I do think, you know, they've scored goals like that before this season, and they're going to have to score goals like that again if they're going to get results, honestly. So, you know, I think we're saying, you know, both sides are going to kind of have to meet in the middle on that one. At some point, you're going to have to be able to play direct. But I do think it's good ultimately that they try to play a more possession-based game, because that is, you know, I think there's a mounting weight of evidence that that is kind of the best way to play if you can do it. But it's just, it's hard to do that. And the Revs are finding that out, hitting every branch on the way down. But, you know, they should keep trying. But, you know, at some points, yeah, if you need to find a goal, you need to find a goal. And sometimes you got to go long to Brioni.
Yeah, Porter says, all Porter, not the coach Caleb Porter, but Porter on Twitter says, all Revs goals come from direct play at the moment. So why, in your opinion, does Caleb Porter insist on playing from the back despite not having a team capable of doing that? You kind of just answered it, but I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
Well, you know, I mean, why they're trying to do it is because it is, you know, like anyone who's ever played soccer knows that it's easier to have the ball than to not, because if you don't have the ball, you're just chasing around, you're tiring yourself out, and that's just not the best way to do it. And also, if you can do it, it, you know, helps you really control the game. And I know that's a buzzword that sounds meaningless after a certain amount of time, because the Revs just seem to be unable to do it. But, you know, I do believe that that is, you know, that is a good system to have. It's not like these are bad principles to aspire to, but they are principles that you are aspiring to. You are certainly not reaching them at all right now. And yeah, I mean, they, you know, the chances that they've created, it should also be said, like, they just were not very good at finishing over the last, like, you know, really month and a half. And so, you know, I think the better moments of that system have not really been allowed to fully be seen, because at the end of it, Giacomo Brioni like misses the finish or something. And so, you know, you don't get a sense of that. But in this game in particular, you did see, like, they didn't really create a lot, you know, through open play. Just, you know, you saw moments, especially involving like Esmir, where they did link passes pretty well. You know, Carlos obviously can always find a pass. If he can do it at the right tempo that Caleb Porter wants is another question still to be answered a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's the best system, but it's just, it's not working right now. But you know, this is always the thing when you're adapting to a new thing, you're trying to find tangible results. Sometimes they're harder to see. Does that mean you just give up on that thing, or do you keep trying to do the thing? And so I think that's kind of where Caleb Porter is. And he seems like a pretty resilient type. So he's going to keep trying to hammer that square peg into a round hole, possibly for a little while longer. You know, hopefully maybe finding some compromises here is kind of, you know, maybe what I'd hope for.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think in, you know, 2024, your ideal way of playing soccer is probably the way Caleb Porter wants to play, although maybe doing a little bit faster than they've done this season. But, you know, with that said, it's pretty obvious that this roster under Bruce Arena was not designed to play that way, and it was designed to play in transition and more direct, and they look more comfortable doing that, and we saw that in this game. But rather than change to fit that, you know, Caleb Porter is trying to get, you know, the guys on the roster to find a way to play the way he wants to play, and then also, you know, slowly shift some of those guys out and bring guys in, like on paper, Arriaga and Ivicic, who can play more the way he wants to play. I think they do still need that, you know, number eight, number six that can play more that way to make it work, as long as some other pieces. But I think that's the direction Caleb Porter is going to go, is keep kind of forcing that system, and then, you know, the summer window, bring in a few more guys that can help him play that way and eventually make it work. You know, will he get the time to do that if they, you know, if they end up midsummer and only have two wins? I don't know. I assume he's gotten assurances that he will, because that's what he's doing. So, you know, I go back and look at the Brad Friedel era, when Brad Friedel only knew one way to play, and that was a very basic press. And when that got figured out, it was over. I don't feel necessarily the same way here. I do think that, you know, Caleb Porter is playing a system that on paper makes more sense when you have the right pieces, and maybe he'll get those pieces eventually and figure it out. I don't think all hope is lost yet. But yeah, it seems like he's got a system, and whether or not that's the right system for these players, it doesn't seem like it is to me yet. He's got to find a way to make it work long term, and if he gets the time to do it, maybe he will. But I just think he thinks that's the way to play, and he's got to find a way to do it, or try or die trying.
yeah, and you know, I think I hope that he does get like a full year, because I mean, he's won cups in multiple places. It's not like, I mean, people just write this off like he doesn't know what he's doing, but he does, though. I mean, plainly, like, he's won an MLS in multiple places. He knows what he's doing to at least some extent, surely, that, you know, you should give him some amount of rope here to, you know, kind of a little bit of leash to figure it out. So he just, you know, he's not been working with, you know, his roster, essentially. And so this is a classic dynamic, you know, in any sport, in any situation where you have a coach dealing with those circumstances. Yeah, it's not going to look pretty initially. And so, if you can give him time, but the question is always, you know, is he going to have the time? Is the team going to, you know, not totally sink so hard that it's like inescapable and he just like loses the locker room or something, you know, and that's where you would see a change, you know, in the short term. I think if he can avoid that, which I think, you know, he's a decent chance of doing, then yeah, he can hang around a little bit to maybe implement some more of his stuff. But in order to hang around, yeah, like I think he might have to be okay with some Route One a little bit, you know, every once in a while.
Yeah, agreed. I think the disconnect is, you know, in the offseason we heard Caleb Porter and Curtin Offal act like this was a win now roster, and now we're hearing that, you know, it's not, and they need to make these additions. And yeah, the things we heard in the offseason changed pretty quickly from when reality hit. The Anime Stoner on Twitter says, Ivicic, I thought, looked pretty good. Some good stops and pretty good distribution. The team overall was looking better. Not great, but better. More of a comment than a question. Do you generally agree with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, he had one truly great save that was, you know, that saved you from giving up a sure equalizer from, you know, the other team's arguably their most skilled, I would say inarguably their most skilled player, definitively their most skilled player, who didn't start, you know, should be said. You know, it's like, talk about a team with like designated players, maybe not necessarily firing on all cylinders, but he did, you know, Shaqiri is elite at that one thing, and he did the thing, and Ivicic produced, you know, a truly great save. He wasn't asked to do a ton in the game, but, you know, they had a couple chances late, and he was in the right place at the right time to make the save. So, yeah, you know, I would like to see more of him in possession with his feet, I guess. But looks like he's, you know, I feel like he's going to get those chances in the coming weeks, and I will definitely be tested based on who they're going to be facing over the next month.
All right, we got a couple of comments or questions rather about the miss of the season that happened late in stoppage time. Trey on Twitter says, let's say Chonklai's goal doesn't happen. Would Chonklai get the same hate Vrioni would for his bad late pass to Carle's heel? And Traeger says, if you had the same breakaway as Chonklai and Carle's heel had, would you have scored? How bad is it that they muffed that opportunity?
I mean, I would have been caught, or I would have like tripped over the ball or something. Cause I'd be like, oh my God, I'm in a professional game and I'm in on goal. And I would just, it would have blown my mind. And, you know, it's like where this happens to me when I play indoor. This is a minor tangent, but just like, you know, some people, for them, good at people, what the game slows down for them, you know. But in my mind, I always feel like it speeds up for me. So it plays at like 3.0 speed or whatever, 3x speed. And I just, and I'm just like, oh, what happened? So anyway, I would not have scored, long story short. But yeah, you know, the things like that, you know, that's probably true that, you know, Vrioni, just through his, you know, reputation, unfortunately, at this point in New England, he probably would have gotten a lot more open criticism if he had been the one to mess that up. And, you know, unfortunately, he's been in those spots where he has either, you know, been on a goal and missed a pass or missed the finish or whatever. But, you know, he does get into those spots. And Chonkley also was playing center forward at that point, and he got into those spots. You're like, okay, so these guys can get into spots. So it's just, again, it's a problem of finishing. So, you know, for all of the sort of systemic challenges of Porter and all of, you know, what he's trying to do, you know, he's a couple just like gimme goals away in some of these games from maybe getting a couple more results than they've gotten. So, yeah. No, I mean, Chonkley's got to, he's got to do better there. I mean, that's simple professional things to like square the ball to your former MVP teammate for an, you know, a tap in. So, yeah, it, you know, again, if Ivicic doesn't make that save and it's 1-1 at that point, you know, I mean, that's the game right there. So, you know, these are the margins, and they need to be better at twisting those margins just a little bit more in their favor, AKA taking care of easy goals like that. Just, you know, yeah, that's a simple one that they need to clean up.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would have been caught on that. My pace would not have continued to stay away from the defender. I've also told the story before that I was the starting striker on my freshman team in high school, and I scored 0 goals. So I'm not giving myself any credit.
You were a target forward. You know, you just held it up for other guys.
That is actually what I was. So I'll, you know, if I'm gonna give myself an excuse, they said you're the tallest guy in the team. You play up top. Didn't work out.
Your crouch of your era.
But yeah, that's it for professionals. That's a very, very terrible missed opportunity. And if, you know, I think if Chonkley hadn't scored the goal, I do think he probably would have gotten almost as much hate as Vrioni might have. And I also think that Chonkley was starting to get some decent criticism prior to scoring last week, because he was a guy that hadn't scored at all during the MLS season this year. So he was already kind of starting to get criticized. So had he not scored in these,
coach, honestly, you know, Porter was in on him saying like he needs to learn how to fit into the team, which is probably still true, by the way, but it's just now he's scoring those goals. But yeah, no, you're right. He was getting flack before the last 2 weeks, I guess. Yeah. And maybe, I mean, you know, maybe it's a start of something for him though.
I mean, and he got benched against Toronto. So, you know, I mean, Vrioni gets more criticism, but I think Chonkley was also starting to get into that boat. So, yeah, I do think he would have gotten the criticism. I also think he would have gotten the criticism had, you know, Chicago come back and tied the game, because, you know, that could have happened and it would have looked very, very bad had they missed that, you know, gimme chance. But, you know, as professional soccer players, you have to finish that opportunity, especially the two designated players that the Revs had in that situation. And somebody responded to me and also put some blame on Carly Teal for not finishing that, but I think that's the pass. You know,
that is absolutely the pass.
If Carlos Hill was sprinting at full speed, he might have gotten to that, but he wasn't sprinting at full speed because he had to slow down to stay onside. So that's, you know, it's
right.
The pass needs to be better. Steve McGrogan on Twitter says, why is everyone so afraid of just taking cracks at goal?
Well, I mean, you know, suppose, listen, that's, I feel like that's like a guy from like 1990s soccer Twitter or something, like those accounts where it's just like all guys shooting from like 40 yards out or whatever, like coming to life and asking a question in this podcast. And I mean, look, I'm not against that, but I just think that you already stated the stat about, you know, Chonkley's shots from outside the box and how he's now 1 for 43 or whatever it was. And so it's like, you know, there it is right there. I mean, it's just a very low percentage thing. This isn't like hockey where, you know, you shoot it, it misses, but it's still in play. You shoot it and it misses. That's turnover. It's a goal kick. You know, it's like you've now wasted potentially all of the buildup that you put in or trying to get yourself in any kind of good position or dangerous position. I'm not saying you don't shoot from distance. Clearly we saw that sometimes it does work and sometimes it produces spectacular, you know, just, you know, uplifting goals that can have impact, you know, greater than just what they are on a score line in terms of, you know, what it means for your team, I guess, sometimes. I mean, getting a win is something like that is for the Revs on the road. But yeah, I think in general, you know, just the guy in the stands just being like, shoot, you know, is not necessarily the best offensive strategy maybe for the Revs.
Yeah, and the Revs are very much a kind of a mid-table team as far as total shots taken this season. They're not near the bottom of the charts. They're very much in the middle. I don't know that there's you know, times throughout the games where you'll see an individual play where we'll say, you know, he should have shot that and been more selfish for sure. But I don't know if that's necessarily the Revs' problem here. It's oftentimes getting in the right position to take the shot and that, you know, pass in the final third to set somebody up for the shot. I can't say there were that many times in this game where that was a comment that floated through my head. But there have been times this season where it has, for sure. But I don't know if that was the problem in this game. Palm COYS, which I assume has come on you Spurs, says vamos chonklai. So comment, no question there. Jesse Marks on Twitter says Porter seems to have made two good additions, but to free up space for a striker, he probably does need to move Romney and Ravas. Think we can get something for him? This is a question for the summer window, I guess, a ways away. But they do need to make up space in the roster to make the additions. Porter, thanks. Do you think Romney? We heard. Well, I'll add some more context. We heard Romney was one of the guys that was being bandied about, and Tom Bogert actually was on the show this past week. If you didn't listen to it, you should check it out. Seth asked him about what Tom Quinlan said, which is that he heard 100,000 was all they were asking for Dave Romney, and that fit with what Tom Bogert heard too. So there weren't any takers apparently because they didn't move him for 100,000. Do you think there'll be takers for Romney in the summer window, and do you think Ravas is the guy that they can find a way to move on from?
I mean that feels difficult for me. I mean, the Revs basically just got like a you know, a goalkeeper, granted, who has a lot of baggage, but who like a couple of years ago was elite for basically nothing. So it shows you like the market for that is maybe not what you want it to be. And then for Romney, yeah, I mean, I had heard similar things, and then obviously, yeah, I mean, others have said that, yeah, I mean, they were trying to move Romney and there were no takers for a very, you know, marked down whatever cents on the dollar price. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's more just like his current contract is not favorable. So you're basically, you'd effectively almost be like sort of paying or, you know, or getting a reduced price in order to get a team to take his salary. So, but yeah, I, you know, I think part of it that I would wait on is the potential for some of those new, you know, we saw the report from The Athletic that there were like potentially new rules being implemented by the league this summer, including, you know, a second buyout, which would be huge for them, having already had to use theirs on a goalie who mysteriously never played for the team. You know, would you use that on, you know, to maybe free up a designated player spot? You know, I mean, I don't like to talk about the club cutting a player, but, you know, I mean, I don't know if they would cut Giacomo Verino and just straight up part ways with him. That seems like that would be extreme. Maybe you could, you know, offload him in some other way, but, you know, that would be one route to maybe free up some space. But as far as dumping two players like, you know, Ravas or Romney, you would think you'd be able to find a way to trade Romney, your 2023 Defender of the Year. But, you know, apparently other teams are not as interested in a sort of no-nonsense center back like him. And so, yeah, I mean, we saw there really wasn't a market. Maybe that'll change in the summer. Teams have injuries. You know, some things open up where they'll have greater need of a guy and they would like to add him. But for the moment, I'm not super optimistic about that. I'm not entirely sure. I know Porter said 3, 4, 5 additions in the summer, but I don't really know exactly how they're going to find the space for that. You know, just by through those routes that the person asked about there. So, but
they have zero senior roster spots open, right? So you mentioned these mechanisms that are going to help in the summer, the U22 additional spots. You still need a senior roster spot to use them. Yeah. So they have to move on from somebody. You know, I'm surprised that they couldn't find a taker for Dave Romney. I knew he was making, I think, close to 700,000. Still, he was the Revs Defender of the Year. And if you're only asking for, you know, 100K in GAM or maybe less, it seems like that should be, there should be someone that takes it. But, you know, you're right, there could be an opportunity this summer where somebody has an injury and needs that center back and is more willing to make that move, or even somebody has to put somebody on a season-ending injury list so they open up a spot that wasn't available now and they make that move. At the same time, he has an option year in 2025. It's not a guaranteed year. So if you're the Revolution and you know, if you're Caleb Porter and you want to move on to Dave Romney, and it's the middle of the summer and somebody's asking you to, you know, throw an additional GAM and other stuff to move on from, you know, it's probably not worth it. You probably just wait till the end of the season and let him walk. It's crazy to say that about a guy who was your defender of the year last year, but it seems like that's where they're at. You know, you mentioned the buyout. It's a tough question. Would the Revolution use the buyout on Vrioni? And, you know, it's all many millions of dollars that they'd have to have to give him, because he's guaranteed through next year and then as an option year after that. Are the Crafts willing to do that, especially considering they've already, you know, paid a transfer fee for him and invested all this money into him? I don't know. For Ravas, you know, he's guaranteed through 2026 and he hasn't shown much of anything this year. So I think you're gonna have trouble finding a taker for him, unless it's, you know, an opportunity to kind of go back to Europe for free. But and maybe that's something he'd want to explore if he stays on the bench. So I think they're in a tough spot. I don't think there's many movable pieces that you'd want to move. I don't think, you know, just looking across the roster, like Tommy McNamara is a guy whose roster spot you'd love to have, but nobody's gonna want him, right? Unless again you're offering pieces with him to get someone to take him. So when he talks about bringing in several guys during the summer, it's hard to see how he opens up roster spots without trading guys that are actually, you know, very useful pieces to this team. So we'll see what happens, but I don't know. It's hard to be optimistic about him finding the ways to, you know, open up those roster spots right now, unless he moves on from somebody that has been playing well. Big John on Twitter says, unfortunately, I wasn't able to watch the game tonight, but how did we play overall? Any positives besides the 3 points? We covered a lot of it. Is there anything else that you think is worth mentioning about, you know, positives besides the 3 points?
You know, I mean, Esmir back in the lineup, I actually liked a lot of what I saw from him. I think every time I watch him play, especially with Carlos, you know, when he's sort of in the right attacking midfield role, Carlos obviously in the center role, I like it when they sort of interchange and they, you know, swap positions, because Carlos likes to drift out to the right anyway and to then cut inside on his left. Esmir is comfortable, from what I've seen, moving more centrally. That's a really cool thing. And I know Porter has talked about how he wants in his system. Again, we keep talking about it like it's an inflexible thing, but, you know, just ideally, I know he wants, you know, kind of one winger to be tucked in and one winger to be really wide and play, you know, vertically. And Esmir gives you the tucked in version of that. Definitely. He's the definition of that. And he's someone who, if you want to play a possession game, a positional game, is a great piece. And, you know, is a player who has, you know, clearly a bright future. We also saw Noel Buck come back in after being hurt. That's a good sign. I would like to see more of him. You know, we talked about how Marc-Anthony Kay had a pretty good game passing the ball. I think Buck potentially could give you that too, honestly, but he hasn't, been forced to play with the kind of discipline, you know, growing up in the arena system there, where you have to not maybe just charge forward all the time from a center midfield role. But, you know, I'd like to see more of him. So it was good to see him back. I'll also just shout out that Nick Lima slide tackle to save a clear shot on goal. That was maybe underrated play of the game in a way, because that came really out of almost nothing, and it was a terrible defensive miscue. And then all of a sudden Nick Lima comes in out of nowhere to just, you know, dramatically and awesomely block a shot. Kessler also had a similar type of sliding tackle. So both players like that, you know, they don't always get mentioned and they don't show up necessarily in the box score in a really notable way, but those are the margins on which, you know, you win or lose, or I guess draw a game like that.
Those are some great calls. I think the Nick Lima tackle, or block rather, was very impressive. Kessler had one like that too. Although I think the commentator said that looks great and it was a great move, but good thing the guy didn't cut back, because if that was like Messi or somebody, it's probably not working. But you're probably looking pretty stupid. But you know, they knew the situation. They made good slides and you know, prevented good chances that way. Seeing a theme here, Blue Jay 6 said, good win, didn't watch because the Bruins. Now go and win again. I think both of us would agree that, you know, this was a good win, but they need to show it by going and winning again. Mild Bill Davidson, again, going back to kind of a similar question as the last one, what worked for the Revs against Chicago, and will it work against the Red Bulls next week? We touched on this. Do you think what they did in this game is repeatable against the Red Bulls, who play a very different style? And I've also, up until getting absolutely blasted by Miami this weekend, have been looking pretty good this season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think it will work in the same way. Obviously, you know, I mean, just in any sort of measurable way, I think Chicago are a team that is just not on the same level as a bunch of the other teams that especially the Revs are about to play over the next month. Both New York teams, Philly and Columbus, you know, whatever moments those teams are in, I think just in general, they are of a higher standard than where Chicago is in terms of just talent wise right now, especially in the attack. And so, you know, yeah, they're going to have to be, everything's going to have to come up a level against those teams. You can't just expect to win 1-0 on a kind of fluky one-off moment. You know, I mean, obviously in the past, we've seen this team experience success in one goal games. So you're going to have to be willing, you know, to kind of scrap it out in those moments. But yeah, everything's going to have to be tighter and just better. I mean, their passing percentage in against Chicago was poor, and you can't be doing that playing, you know, Porter ball against these better teams. You will absolutely get picked off, as we saw against Miami. Granted, you know, they have the God himself there, but, you know, I mean, just in general, like, you know, they in other phases of the game, not just based on what Messi did, they were outplayed, and we saw that, you know, in other versions against Toronto, etc. So yeah, I don't think it's going to work in the same way. They're going to have to raise up their game a couple of notches, especially when they have the ball, as far as not creating bad turnovers, which has really been, you know, the fault line that their season has broken on so far this year. And then on the other side, not taking chances when they do get them. So both those things have to be, you know, still very much tightened up, even, you know, in regard to the game last night or on Saturday.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, Ivicic not being under a lot of pressure in the Chicago game. He's going to be under pressure against the Red Bulls. They're known for, you know, they've always been known for being a pressing team. And they're also a team that has lost zero home games this season. So it is a very difficult ask for the Revolution to go under Red Bull Arena and come out with 3 points. I think despite where the Revolution are in the standings, this is a game where a draw would be a good result. And yes, the Revs are clawing themselves out of a big hole, but, you know, it's a very difficult game. You talk about good signings this season. Forsberg, Emil Forsberg for the Red Bulls has been a fantastic player. One of the highest rated players for the MLS this year on FootMob. He's just been a very, very good addition to the Red Bulls and really helped turn that team around. I think that's going to be a very difficult game. It's going to play out a lot differently than the Fire game did. You know, if we're testing the Revs' ability to pass out of the back, it's going to be a lot more tested against the Red Bulls than it was against the Fire. You know, saw some good comments about Arriaga playing out of the back this last game. You know, you mentioned Henry Kessler. It's another story when the Red Bulls is a team replacing. So that'll tell us a lot. But no, I don't think the way they won against Chicago and how that game played out will necessarily translate to Red Bull Arena, which I think will be a very different game and a lot more of a difficult game. And again, you know, I think they needed 3 points in Chicago, given where they were in the standings. You know, they need 3 points every game, given where they are in the standings. But I think Red Bull is actually a game where if you get a draw on the road, you take it.
I agree. And yeah, I mean, also it's going to be, you know, you mentioned in terms of the pressing with New York, it's going to be a very physical game, and it's going to be a game where, you know, players like Carlos are going to, you know, be harassed in a way that he has been quite a bit, you know, in MLS. And how do they react to that? How do they respond to that? You know, I mean, it's going to happen. It's probably not going to be called as perfectly as you want it to be by the official, because we just know this based on experience. So how do you respond to that? They know that's coming, and it's games like this. It's always just about how can you handle that? And technically, you know, people are asking, why do they try to play the way that Porter wants them to play? The best way to break presses is by playing an up-tempo possession-based passing game where you're just pulling them out of position. So if they can do that, then they have the perfect antidote for the way that Red Bulls want to press them. But it's just a matter of, can they execute that?
Yeah, I think the up-tempo part is the part that's been largely missing this season from the Revolution. Gabo on Twitter says, well, first he says, Revs versus Chicago, brought the fight, check, won the match, check, lost the possession battle. All true. He also says, Porter once said, goals will come. Is now a good time to start believing? I think we've gotten this question a few times. Is now a good time to start believing the goals will come? They still only scored one goal.
Yeah, they still only scored one goal. As we said, they missed an absolute sitter of a chance there to, you know, put the game to bed there. And I still have not really seen a lot from Giacomo Vrioni in terms of finishing or even really getting, you know, chances on goal in against Chicago. You know, he's also just like, the thing that frustrates me, that continuously frustrates me about Vrioni, is he's just like never really involved in their build-up play. And I get that there are strikers like that, but it's like, you know, that feels particularly incongruent with not just how Porter wants to play, but just even going back to like how Bruce wanted to play in terms of Carles's involvement with the striker. I mean, he had such a good rapport with Bo and they were always on the same page. And even with Buxa, you felt like he was involved. You know, they would run counterattacks through him and would run these sweeping moves. With Rioni, you know, he just never really gets enough touches on the ball. And then when he does get in on goal, he just hasn't proven that he's enough of a clinical finisher to really justify having a player like that on the field all of the time. So, yeah,
probably just use his right foot sometimes too.
It, probably. And, you know, so I think there's still ways to go there to put it diplomatically.
Yeah. Agreed. We have one more serious question left and then we have a couple of less serious questions. David Conference says, what would you want to see happen in the summer transfer window? I hope they buy out Vrioni's contract and then find another midfielder to help Holster.
Well, I mean, if you bought out Vrioni's contract, then you would, I think you would absolutely have no excuse to not go get a top level goal scorer. Yes. I don't necessarily know what that looks like, but, or who that, you know, embodies in particular. I was trying to do some research on this recently in terms of like looking up European teams that like play on turf. Like there's some French teams that do that. And so you're like, okay, if you're looking for guys who maybe you could actually, you know, have a serious chance of signing, based on, you know, the context of your club and how you play and the surface you play on, you know, what would that look like? And so, you know, there are some options out there. It's not like it's not going to be Lionel Messi. It's not going to be Luis Suarez or like a world-class name that everyone's heard of. I did see that Marco Reus is not going back to Dortmund next year. So let the games begin speculating on that one. But I really don't think they'd have a chance of signing, you know, a player necessarily in that profile. But yeah, I think if the Crafts were like, okay, we're going to take these millions that we've invested in this guy and just like, you know, whatever, throw it out the door and give you, you know, buy out Vrioni, you would have to get a striker. But I do agree. I mean, as we were saying, like they're missing a real legit, you know, number six, a guy who can really do the holding midfielder role that I know Polster has always been tasked with, but doesn't ever seem to naturally be the guy for. You know, he seems more like a box to box guy. So yeah, I would like to see that too. But if you're going to cut Rioni, then you'd have to replace him one for one with a genuine goal scorer.
Yeah, that would be the most impactful move they could make, is to buy out Rioni and replace him with a guy that can actually put the ball in the back of the net. You know, will that happen? It's not, if I had limitless money and it was, you know, I was in charge, that's what I would do. Will Crafts be willing to do that is a much different question. But yeah, you hope that's what happens, I think. Or you know, in a better case scenario, that somehow they find, you know, Vrioni's not happy. They find a way to mutually terminate his contract and let him go back to Europe for free somewhere. I think that would be your ideal scenario. I don't know how realistic that is, but it's within the realm of possibilities, maybe. That would be your better situation. And then, yeah, I think the other thing you need to do is go out and get that guy that can, you know, either play next to Polster or instead of Polster as your, you know, true number six, and someone that's also, you know, more capable of in possession, kind of springing Calais Hill or one of the wingers forward or something like that. So those would be the moves I would look to make. But again, I think the buying out Vrioni is a very big ask for how much they've invested in him and how much they were going to have to pay him to buy him out. So I wouldn't necessarily be holding my breath that that's what happens. All right. First of all, less serious questions. We had several people that commented on, this was Greg that tweeted out asking for questions for this one, and he joked that this was undoubtedly the biggest win by a New England sports team this evening. Obviously, we knew about the Bruins. Several people commented on that. I think some of them were also joking, but some of them, I think, actually took that comment seriously. Yes, we were joking. That was Greg, and he was joking. It was not meant to be taken seriously. So, yeah. And then I enjoy
his contributions to Revs Recap Twitter, for sure. I told him that when during the Messi game. It was like 65,000 people came out to see, I forget who it was, like, you know, some other players like debut or something. I was just like, it's good stuff. It, you know, it's definitely, and if people take that seriously, then that's a them problem, honestly. So, you know,
I think about 95%+ of the tweets on Revolution Recap account are Greg, and he has a much better sense of humor than I do. So you should not take a lot of those things seriously. But all right, here's one for you. And this is from Brian Flaherty, who did not know that Hayden Bird from boston.com/theBostonGlobe was going to be on this episode. But he shared the story on the Boston Globe from the game, which was a staff wire story. So you did not write it. But there was a picture of, I believe it was Tomas Csokalai and his days playing for Racing Club, in which it said, this was a picture of him playing earlier in the season for the Revs. So Hayden, care to defend the Globe? And is this your fault?
I guess you already gave the game away saying I didn't write that. I was going to lie and I was going to be like, yeah, it was me. And I was doing it specifically to troll that one guy who I knew was going to write in, and it was all the long game. But no, I mean, you know, sometimes you don't always have the right photo in there that you want. So I think it's been updated. So
they did. They corrected it. They corrected it. Okay. It's been corrected since.
So, you know, it is. You know, look, to just inside baseball real quick, I guess, in terms of media coverage, you know, it's just in modern media, you just do not have the number of photographers out there that there once was, I guess. And so honestly, getting photos of games sometimes is like kind of hard. And honestly, you know, the credit to the Revs and MLS, they do provide photos from the games a lot. And that is actually, at least from my standpoint, when I do stuff for bus.com, where I have kind of more of a say in specific photos that are used, you know, we end up using a lot of those photos that they provide because we just don't have people at a lot of those away games. So that is kind of why that happens. It's not like there were 30 photos from the game and they just skipped over that to go to, you know, Tomas at Racing Club. But yeah, you know, they could probably clean that up though. So I'll, you know, the buck stops with me on that one. Since it's my publication, I'll say that's my bad, and we will be better.
Yeah, I was telling you the story before, but I remember when I used to write for a newspaper, there was one article I put out there, and I actually submitted a caption for the photo. I sent in the photo, submitted a caption for the photo, and it was about Taylor Twellman, and somehow the editor changed it from Taylor Twellman to Trevor Twellman. I was mortified by that for a while, but it does happen, unfortunately, and there's only so much you can do to control it. On that note, Hayden, where can people find you on social media and anything on boston.com or the Globe people should read that's up there now or should look out for?
I mean, I'm at Hayden H. Bird on I'm still calling it Twitter. I'm still gonna go with Twitter, and that's probably actually my username in probably too many places. It's I should probably be more private about, like, you know, my name, but just professionally anyway, that's where you can find me. And then I had a takeaways out like I do for every game that went out this morning, and I think, and you know, I will definitely be very interested. I've been increasingly interested in, yeah, like the Porter system and the Revs sort of adapting to the Porter system. And so, at some point I'm going to take a little bit deeper of a look into that. So keep an eye out for that. I'm not going to put a deadline on myself for that necessarily, but, that will be coming ASAP, especially now that, some of the other, chores, I will say, in my sports writing day to day, as far as, say, like, you know, the NFL draft are out of the way, and I can do a little more in terms of soccer coverage with the Revs. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Hayden. We almost kept it to an hour. We could have almost did it. You can follow me on social media at Sean L. Donahue on Twitter or X or whatever you call it. Of course, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Revolution Recap. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. We have gotten some nice new reviews on iTunes, so much appreciated. Be sure to check out our friends at the Blazing Musket, as well as Hayden Bird on Boston.com and the Boston Globe. Always great stuff from Hayden. Thanks again for listening to Revolution Recap, presented by Bet Online, and we'll be back after the next game with another podcast. That would be the Red Bulls game. We'll see how that goes.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.